Welcome to the Industrial IoT Spotlight, your number one spot for insight from industrial IoT thought leaders who are transforming businesses today, with your host, Eric Walenza.
Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight podcast. I'm your host, Eric Walenza, CEO of IoT One, the consultancy that specializes in supporting digital transformation of operations and businesses. Our guest today is Mo Shun, VP of Global Key Accounts and Alliances, and previously the VP of Engineering at Geek Plus. Geek Plus is a technology company that applies advanced robotics and AI technologies to build flexible automation solutions for warehouses, factories, and supply chain management. In this talk, we discuss the rapid growth of the autonomous mobile robot market and the domain's next stage of development. We also explored the tech stack, system architecture, and business models behind the solutions brought to market by Geek Plus. If you find these conversations valuable, please leave us a comment and a five-star review. And if you'd like to share your company's story or recommend a speaker, please email us at team@iot1.com. Finally, if you have an IoT research, strategy, or training initiative that you'd like to discuss, you can email me directly at erik.walenza@iot1.com. Thank you.
Mo, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Eric. It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting.
Yeah, really appreciate you taking time to talk with me about Geek Plus, because this is, say, one of the most interesting companies that I've come across. And so I'd say already a fair bit about Geek Plus, but I'm interested in getting more into the details today. But before we go there, maybe you can just give a little bit of background on how you actually landed at Geek Plus. I know you were previously at almost 18 years with Oracle, so you know moving over to a startup is a bit of a switch.
Right. So my whole career can be kind of divided to like two parts, right? I started with big companies like Oracle and working on database and middleware and applications. So as you mentioned, I spent almost 18 years with Oracle. Then I moved to another big company in financial tech, MSCI. After MSCI, I was thinking about what I should do for my life, right? So it comes across to me that there are a lot of new opportunities, new companies, they're just growing so fast. And since I'm in China, I think, and everybody heard about this China speed, right? So I really want to join a startup type of company. So I actually met with a few friends and we got talking and we actually started a company in logistics business. I was kind of in charge of the application development for the WMS software. And unfortunately, that company didn't work out, right? But I saw towards the end of that experience, I met with a few guys from Tsinghua University, right? They had this really cool looking company, with the robotics, and they're also solving problems for warehouse operators and logistic operators. So we got talking, and they were very interested in my background experience in software, right? They invited me to join the company. So that's how I joined Geek Plus. At the time, we were pretty small. I think it was like probably around 200 people at the time. The headquarters in Beijing, and I'm based in Shanghai. So I've been traveling back and forth between the two cities for a while. Now, I think that's how I landed in Geek Plus. And you mentioned that you were very excited about Geek Plus, and so am I, so was I at the time. And I'm still amazed at how we are able to come up with new products, new solutions all the time. Although I think it's been a couple of years already, right? We started I joined in 2018, right? So it's been almost 4 years. But every time I look at the company, right, it's drastically different from about a year ago. And we're coming up with new products and new solutions. And I'm still very excited about Geek Plus to this day, right? So that's kind of my answer.
It's interesting because if you look at a lot of the, you know, a lot of startups are focused on pure software, right? And then they can be highly innovative compared to the legacy companies in the industry because they're doing something fundamentally different, right? But, you know, Geek Plus is building, you're building hardware. And of course, you know, the software platform that operates the hardware. But you have all of these companies that are building, you know, AGVs and other automation equipment for, you know, for decades. And it's interesting how quickly Geek Plus has become the model, you know, the company that people are sending out their executives to China to study, you know, so how quickly that switched, because typically in hardware is hard. It's actually hard to get new products out to market. So I'm really interested actually in diving a little bit more into how you manage to go through these innovation cycles so quickly, right? Something that, you know, Geek Plus is now what, 6 years old. And I think a typical product cycle at some companies might be 3 or 4 years, right? But before we get there, it would be great, Mo, if you can just give us a quick breakdown of what Geek Plus does. So what's the core value proposition here?
So Geek Plus is a robotics and AI company. So we build this robots, we call it AMRs, autonomous mobile robots, right? They are like your home, you know, automated sweepers, but it's industrial size, right? It's about 1 meter by 1 meter. What they do is that they work in the warehouse. Basically, in some of the solutions, they replace some of the movements of materials between different, you know, stations, for example. And there's one particular solution that's been used in the warehouse. It's called goods-to-person solution. So basically, in the traditional warehouse, you have people going out to the warehouse floors and pick out stuff from the shelves. They have to do a lot of walking, right? So with a goods-to-person solution, basically the robots will carry the items to you by, you know, lifting up the shelves and move those to the what we call the picking station. Or in nowadays, there are various different form factors for those kind of solutions. Basically, there's also a toast-to-person. Basically, it's not moving the whole shelf or pallet. It's moving one particular tote to the workstations. And there are also solutions to move various stuff in a kind of a vertical space, right? We have now kind of a new solution called four-way shuttles. So they work on, you know, a stacked storage. Basically, you know, they can move items between different floors. Basically, those are either a totes or pallet-based. And they will move the items to the, you know, the workstations you need. So to reduce a lot of labors, you know, reduce some of the kind of people have to move around in the warehouse, right? So that's one of the major applications for our robots. But our robots are very generic, right? They can be used in a lot of different situations. So we're still kind of looking at the new verticals and new solutions for the usage of our robots, right? So that's kind of in a nutshell what Geek Plus do and our products and solutions.
Goods to person, was this already a category that existed before Geek Plus, or was this invented by Geek Plus?
Yeah, this is pioneered by a company called Kiva, and that was acquired by Amazon a little while ago, I think a couple of years ago. Amazon bought Kiva, and they kept, you know, Kiva for its own use. So basically, you know, Amazon has this huge warehouse robots running, but nobody else is doing that, right? So we saw opportunity in there, and we started with Kiva-like products, but then we expanded on that, right? I think we now have many more solutions, you know, including those toaster-person solutions that kind of used in a different type of Kiva started that trend. I think now I think it's been very popular, you know, among the, you know, I think the new generation of warehouses.
Gotcha. And then there's the question of why now, why would it make sense for a new product category to come into the market now? is it primarily because of the e-commerce use case, or is it more that the technology now exists where previously it was not feasible to have this type of, you know, autonomous robotic system?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit both. So I think I think that a lot of companies in China market are interested in this is because of the surge of the e-commerce business, right? I was in a customer meeting this morning with a global company, and we talked about this Double 11 sale coming up. They know this, right? I think the mainstream media, they report on those, and I think it's kind of everybody knows now. In China, we have this kind of mega sales, and we just don't have enough people to work on those, on the back end, right? When people buy things, it's fun, right? But no, there's a lot of work on the logistics or back end side, right? There's a lot of work to be done, and we are short on people. Now, I read a report about 2 weeks ago. There was a Wall Street Journal report on there's a shortage of labor in the factories nowadays, because nobody, I think the migrant workers, they don't want to go to the coastal cities anymore. They want to stay closer to home, and they can find jobs actually closer to home, pays pretty well. So there's a shortage of labor, and nowadays the younger guys don't want to go to the warehouse anymore, right? So I think that's kind of on the one side, I think there's a kind of a surge of e-commerce business, and because of e-commerce business and the warehouse operation becomes a lot more difficult, a lot more complex. The traditional supply chain, they were doing like bulk in and bulk out, right? They operate on either case level or pallet level. Now they have to pick out individual items and ship to consumers directly. So that's kind of one of the trend, right? That's driving this kind of operation efficiency. Then there's also, of course, there's not enough people to work on in warehouse. So that's on the kind of supply side, right?
Yeah, and I guess that's, I know you have this RaaS, or robot as a service business model. I think it's interesting that this solution allows you to do that, right? Because a more traditional automation system would have basically fixed assets that are installed in a facility, and therefore it's, you know, you make the investment and then you try to use it, but you basically have that fixed investment. And here you could have, within this new type of automation system, you could have 10 robots in a given warehouse, or you could scale up to 50 robots depending on demand fluctuations over the year. Are you seeing big adoption of this business model, especially around times like Double 11, or is it the market still primarily geared towards kind of more traditional asset, purchasing assets and maybe subscribing to the platform to manage them?
Yeah, I think the current market, I think, is still, I think I would say from our point of view, I think we still see a kind of a 90-10 split. Majority still being the kind of a asset purchase, and they want to own the hardware, own the robots, and to operate in their own facilities, right? But you mentioned Double 11 sales. So RaaS is used as kind of a supplemental model to help with the kind of the demand fluctuations. So for Double 11, and we have one of our customers, they come out to us and they want to deploy a fleet of robots to add on to their existing fleet of robots so they can handle the kind of increase on the demand. Now, that's one way to operate it, right? The other way to operate is that the companies who are new to robotics, and they don't want to kind of have a huge capital outlay, right, to pay for the equipment. So they start with a RaaS model, right? They want to try this out and see how well it operates. And also, I think it's easier decision for them because you know, when you have a large purchase, it goes through, you know, and I think you get a lot of scrutiny, you know, in the company, you know, people want to look at your ROI and things like that, right? But with ROS model, it's a lot easier because, you know, you have an ongoing operating expense, and you just, you know, move that money and to, you know, deploy that to use the ROS, as a, your operating model. It's a lot easier to do that way. And one thing we found is that we own actually a couple of ROS warehouses ourselves. So we use our warehouse as a kind of a base to provide services to majority, I think, e-commerce services, to e-commerce fulfillment services to our companies. It's been working. It's probably my fourth year Double 11 sale with Geek Plus now. And we've been doing this as a way to also to improve our products. So the side benefit of operating a ROS business is that you get all the data, you get all the information about your robots. So, and you can also deploy whatever solutions you have, right? Right now, I think our product team is still, every year we have new robots and new solutions come out, right? So we try those out in our ROS operation, and that helps us to validate the product solutions before we sell this to the market and to the customers.
Gotcha. And I remember last time that we spoke, you mentioned that more than 50% of the sales right now are abroad, right, rather than in China. Is there a significant difference in terms of how the business model works abroad versus in China? Is there more acceptance of ROS in particular markets like Europe, or does this 90-10 rule kind of apply across all markets?
In the European or US market, I think we don't have this ROS option available yet. I think one of the reasons is that we don't have our team, our management team, basically the operators and whoever is going to manage the warehouse locally in those regions, right? We are kind of thinking about whether we should expand that to those regions, but I think we're taking a cautious approach because to operate a ROS model, I think it takes a lot of capital to do that, right? So we want to use our capital very efficiently. Although we get a lot of venture capitals, still, I think we want to take a cautious view, you know, when we start a new business, you know, in different regions. The reason we started in China is that because it's closer to our home team and R&D teams and all that. So there's added benefit of, you know, we can get support easily. In the European and US market and Asia Pac market outside of China, I think pretty much all are still the purchasing model. For those regions, I think, you know, our first priority still, I think, is a high labor cost company countries. So for those countries, I think it's easier to justify the ROIs, and I think, you know, people really see the benefit.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, I'd be curious. Obviously, yes, this capital is a constraint. I know other companies are looking at the potential of partnering with financial intermediaries, right? With some, you know, insurance company or a PE firm, somebody that, you know, basically wants to deploy capital. Do you know if that's something that you guys have explored, or I'm just curious on how this model is being adopted?
We have explored that model as well. I think I say pretty much all, but there's some exceptions, right? People use financial leasing companies as a kind of intermediary, right, to provide the ROS rental model. But no, that's a very small part of the international business.
Gotcha. So your products, you have, I'd say now, a pretty comprehensive portfolio. Is there also, though, kind of an 80-20 rule where 80% of them are your traditional goods to person? Or what does the adoption trend look like right now in terms of different categories?
You're absolutely right. I think there's still this 80-20 rule. I think majority, goods-to-person solutions, I think, but there are different forms and shapes of goods-to-person solutions. So right now, I think our main product is the goods-to-person solution with a kind of rack-to-person solution. But now I think there's a kind of a new wave, a new trend that we're seeing more toast-to-person solutions now, because it's, I think, you know, at least in people's mind, I think those solutions can provide additional benefit. And for some of the business, I think they have very small SKUs or items, products, so they can fit in a kind of standard totes. That actually helps the company to reuse some of the existing infrastructure they have, also be able to leverage some of the vertical spaces. When we have the kind of rack to person, there's a limit to, typically I think there's a limit on the height of the rack. It's probably about 2.8 meters, that's the highest one. So in a typical warehouse or standard warehouse, they have really high ceiling, right? So you're wasting all the the vertical space. I think when the business evaluate the solution, they have to consider all the cost factors. So I think one part of it is the efficiency of the operation. The other part is really the rental cost, right? So they want to leverage the vertical space while still keep the kind of the efficiency requirements. So toast-to-person right now, I think it's getting popular because we have this product, it's 8 meter high. Our latest toast-to-person robots are 8 meter high robots, right? So you can pretty much reach out to higher levels, and your storage density is a lot higher. So I think you can probably store 2 to 3 times more items with those kind of solutions. And so that's additional benefit to our customer.
Gotcha. So the, let's say the moving part of the robot would be similar technology, but then on top of that, there would be a platform that can extend up and down and then basically extend out to grab a tote and draw it in. Is that more or less how the tote to person robot looks?
That's exactly right. Right. So we have this robot with a kind of a similar base, but there's a kind of a fixed and then also a adjustable infrastructure to allow there's an arm reaching out, can extend and to 8 meter high and to be able to grab a totes from the shelves and then move it to the pick station.
I imagine this is not your priority right now, but growing interest in the topic of cobots, so robots that can work more together with people. And of course, those are, I guess, primarily stationary, but at least I've had some discussions with companies about the potential value of having a robot that can, basically a robotic arm that can move around, because you might need that function in different places at different times. Have you looked into this topic of basically robotic, mobile robotic arms?
Yes. I think when you talk about robots, right, I think people talk about industrial robots, which is kind of traditional robots with robotic arms. You can, those traditional in the warehouse, I think they have those depalletizer robots, and they can move the cases around from one pallet to another and things like that. So those are the kind of one type of robots in the industry use. And our robots is mostly we call the AMR robots, right? Moving robots. So they if you can take an analogy, right? So it's like your arm, your legs, right? This is the different functions. What's interesting is that you can combine the use of the two and make the robot do more. And we have those. It's a custom design, right? It depends on really what the customer need for the robotic arms. So we can combine the two and make a complete solution. But really we have to, I think those solutions are kind of a very fragmented. There's no standard product you can building mass and have a kind of a replicate that in different places. So it's very customized and individualized to particular usage. There's one particular combination of the two solutions is that when you look at the warehouse operation, especially when you look at a tote to person solution, you will have a kind of a individual tote move to the picker station. And right now there are a few companies who specialize in using their robotic arms to pick out items, individual items from the tote. So they have a visual picking system to recognize how things are placed and which part it is. So they can basically replace the picker at the station, if you want, right? So basically make the whole operation automated. And we can combine the two. We do actually have a use case deployed in one of the customers. So they're using toast person solution to find the toast for the order, and then have the visual picking system. So that includes the robotic arms and also the vision picking software, because those are the kind of two specialization. I think those visual picking companies, they are typically software companies, and they have a camera, they capture the image of the toads, and they do analysis, and then they send instructions to the robotics arms to pick out the items, right, from the toad. So typically those are the two different companies. They will be integrated, and so if you combine the solutions together, so you make the whole picking process fully automated without human involvement.
Gotcha. Well, let's get a little bit more into the tech stack behind this, because I think when most people look at this, certainly when I look at this, I see a robot, right? And that's a very visual, and kind of compellingly visual part of the product. But really, that's just the tip of the iceberg, right? Most of the technology is in the platform and the software, or in specific components around, the machine vision element. Can you give us a quick breakdown of the tech stack behind your core robots?
So our product solutions are kind of pretty complex, right? Those they have the hardware, as you said, there's a hardware component. There's also pretty complicated software component. So let me start with kind of the hardware itself, right? So the robot itself, I think, basically each robot is an intelligent device, has a lot of sensor data. It has those lidars or ultrasonic sensors, so to detect obstacles and things like that. So it also has, in some cases, and the robot is outfitted with a depth camera or a laser, so they can detect the environment, basically. So there's a perception side, right? So you have to use those sensor data to calculate where you are, right? Basically, positioning of your robot in the big warehouse or in the big factory. And then, based on the data, the position data and the map, of course, I think some of the robots can scan the floors. It's similar to your home automated sweepers, right? So it scans the whole floor and scans warehouse or factories. So there's a map built out for the environment. So based on the position data and your map, the robot should be able to kind of calculate, going from A to B, how it navigates around, the path and also the obstacles. So this is kind of one side of the, this kind of a base technologies for the robotics, right? Basically, you have a perception, you have navigation capabilities. In a typical usage scenario in the warehouse or factories, we have multiple hundreds of robots running together, right? So there's a task management side of things. There's also you have to manage the traffic jams and the paths of the robots moving from A to B, although I think there's a direct path. But maybe it's better to take a D2 because the direct pass is blocked or used by some other robots, right? So there's a coordination of the robots, and we call the there's a kind of a multi-agent intelligent management system we call the robot management system. So basically, it takes a lot of information from the robots and sensor data and all that, and it has also a map, basically, of the warehouse, and try to manage what's the most efficient ways of moving things around or perform the task. Then on top of that, we also have application systems. So when we talk about the warehouse operation, and typically customer has a warehouse management system, so we have to kind of fit in into the integrate with the existing warehouse management systems, because they could be the warehouse could also have a human operation, manual operation. So you have to combine the automated solution with the manual operation. So there is a kind of a abstraction of this particular area as a robot manager area as a kind of a big location to the upper layer WMS systems. So you interact basically by sending pick orders to the the picking software, and then once the picking operation is completely finished, we usually associate the picking order with certain kind of a post number, right? So the upper layer system will know, oh, this is a totally picked out, and this is order ABC. So there's multiple layers of softwares, and right now I think we built this very flexible systems. Basically, you can integrate with different kinds of software and systems, through different APIs. We work with a lot of different WMS companies like Manhattan, SAP, and we also work with some custom-built WMS softwares. And sometimes, in some cases, our customer or partner, they have a very strong software team. They want to talk directly to the robot management software, right? So they are also we also have an API layer for that kind of integrations. It's pretty complex, but also I think our customer has different needs and wants, and they want to have a lot of customization in the operations, and sometimes they come up with new type of usage for robots. So we have to think about how to integrate everything together. In some of the cases, right, they also deploy different types of robots in the same factory. So you have to think about how we orchestrate different parts of the operations and make sure everything can operate and coexist. So just a quick overview of the kind of software and the hardware of the products.
On the integration side, so I can understand you certainly have to integrate with WMS. I don't know, maybe you integrate with ERP or other high-level systems. Do you ever have to integrate with edge-level equipment? So would there be some other third-party equipment that you would have to integrate with to, or how is that managed?
There are some equipments in the warehouse. Sometimes in the warehouse, it's very, they have various different types of automation. So they could have a conveyors. They could also have a vertical lifts. So we have to interact with those equipments as well. So we do build this layer in the what we call the WCS layer to interact with various different types of equipments in the warehouse or factory.
Okay. In the WCS, is that that's an internal layer that you guys have built, or is that part of a WMS? I'm actually not familiar with this.
Yeah, so WCS stands for Warehouse Control System, right? So typically it interfaces with a lot of different automated equipments, those kind of things. And so as the name implies, it's mostly a control software, right? So it controls equipments, talks to the PLCs, and tries to make the vertical lifts go from floor one to floor two, for example, right? That's just one instruction they send to the PLCs, right? And it also can coordinate and orchestrate various different things to work together. So in the case of robotics, right, sometimes if there are multiple floors, and say the robots need to traverse from floor one to floor two, so what happens is that the robot will go to a waiting area or waiting point before the vertical lift, and then the WCS will send an instruction to the vertical lift, basically to tell the lift to go to floor one and open up. Then once it's done, it sends a signal back to the robot. The robot can go ahead and move to the lifts, and then the lift door will close and move to the second story, then opens up and tells the robot to go ahead, and the robot will then go to the destination. So that's kind of one kind of interaction as an example.
Gotcha. Okay, interesting. And on the compute side, I mean, on the one hand, you have a lot of real-time activity, so I suppose this needs to be done relatively close to the robot. So this will be done on-premise. Is it kind of a hybrid on-premise cloud solution, or is it often just fully deployed on-premise? What does the deployment look like?
We support both type of deployments. So we have, for the warehouse operators, and I think for majority of them, I think they're still ops for the on-site, on-premise deployment. But there are also some companies they want to use a cloud deployment because it integrates well with their existing infrastructure. And also, I think we're collecting a lot of information data, as I mentioned, from the robot itself. And we built this a data platform basically to analyze some of the sensor data we collect from the robots. And we use that as a kind of information or data source to do predictive maintenance. Basically, the robots sometimes, I think, even for some of the sensor tags we place in the warehouse, they have they could have a failure, right? So we want to be able to detect those kind of failures and predictive maintenance before it breaks down, and we can fix those issues. And so to basically to ensure the warehouse operation can run continuously without interruption. So we do have that component, and that actually integrates very well with some cloud technologies, and we try to use that to supplement our existing warehouse installations. So we do have both. We also support kind of hybrid. As I mentioned, you have a data platform can be running on the cloud, and also since a lot of warehouse, a lot of robot control instructions and the software needs to have a kind of a real-time, fast access to the network of the robots, right? So we tend to have this kind of edge deployments for warehouse management systems. Then have business application running on cloud. So this can work also, right? So this kind of combination of both cloud, edge, and on-site deployments.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm curious, Mo, just because this seems like an appropriate use case. I have a lot of people ask me about 5G use cases for manufacturing and industrial, and generally, I don't see so many in operations today. So it's a little bit hard to pinpoint where 5G actually will be useful. This intuitively feels like an area where it would make sense. But on the other hand, you seem to be already basically operating the system quite well with the existing connectivity infrastructure. Is there any advantage that you would see? So with 5G, you'd be able to improve performance in some way? Or is it just more of a cost calculation? How do you guys view 5G internally?
We do have some early, more of the demo cases using 5G in a factory or warehouse settings. I haven't seen a kind of a wide adoption of 5G, especially 5G, private 5G or private 4G solutions in the warehouse or factories. One of the reasons may be that, as you mentioned, cost, right? I think for 4G deployments, also 5G deployments, you need to have really have those additional signals in the warehouse or in the factory, right? So the additional tower needs to build, you know, within the existing infrastructure. Right now, I think 5G is still very expensive. So that's one consideration. The benefit it brings, no, it's not that obvious, right? Right now, I think we are using mostly 2.4G Wi-Fi or 5G Wi-Fi. I think it mostly works only in certain cases. I think it has a kind of signal problem, and then we just need to adjust the APs or whatever. No, the physical infrastructure. We have built this kind of detection process in our robots, basically, to kind of figure out, you know, where you have weak signal, so you can kind of add a kind of amplifier or something. So basically, make sure those problems go away. That's the only place I see, you know, 4G or 5G may have an advantage, you know, because signal coverage. And it's less prone to kind of interference, you know, from other, you know, signal sources. But other than that, I think, you know, the Wi-Fi solution is still more, I think, you know, cost effective.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, maybe we can walk through a case. I mean, it'd be interesting to kind of know the before, during, after of a deployment. Is there one that comes to mind?
Yeah, we have a huge number of use cases for, let's say, goods-to-person solutions, right? There's one big sports retailer. I think we started out in China. Now they have adopted solution and deployed to pretty much all their warehouses, you know, in China and plus in Europe and North America, right? So what they have seen is that, you know, we were able to, you know, after we deploy the solution, they were able to see 2 to 3 times improvement in terms of their worker efficiency, the picking efficiency. So they used to be able to say, you know, pick out maybe 50, you know, orders per hour. Now they were seeing maybe 200, 300 orders per hour, right? Because of that, they're able to cut down. They used to outsource their operation to a third party, basically, you know, just to find temporary labor and to, you know, help out with the warehouse operator to do the basic, you know, picking process. Now they're able to cut down spendings on the temporary labors by a huge percentage, and they're able to shrink down their workforce. I think when we started out, they have over 1,000 people across different warehouses. Now they're able to, you know, bring it down to a few hundreds. I think, no, it's less than 1,000 now. I think I'm pretty sure they keep continuing doing those kind of cost savings. And so this is one example for a sports retailer. They're doing e-commerce and also their store fulfillment operations in the warehouse.
I guess when you deploy this, you have to restructure the floor plan to some extent, right? Because instead of people wandering out, you have kind of a segmented section between where the robots are. Is there a change in terms of the efficiency of the inventory storage, or what does that typically look like before and after?
The labor savings is one of the kind of the main benefit you can get out of deploying a robotic solution. There are other advantages. You know, you get a much higher accuracy in terms of the, you know, their operation. People tend to make mistakes. We have them walk around in the warehouse floors and pick out items from just aisles of racks. But when you only have one rack brought to them, you know, in their workstation, they're less prone to make a picking error, right? So they can improve the accuracy. Also, I think training, because, you know, they have a lot of temporary labors, and if they have to train them, you know, periodically, it's a lot of effort they have to do. And with robotic solution, it's pretty easy, right? One of our customers, you know, they come to the warehouse, their CEO come to the warehouse, and they want to learn how this operates. So it took him maybe 5 minutes to learn, and so he start operating in the warehouse, right? So it's very easy to learn. So you save a lot of trainings and those kind of in typical operation, right? You basically you don't need to spend a lot of time to train the employees, and they also save because of the save on the space because of the the manual warehouse when compared to the automated warehouse. You typically tend to leave a wider aisle because people have to move. And especially for Double 11, you have thousands of people in the same warehouse. You have to leave enough room for them to move around. So in the automated case, and the robots only use very small space, the aisles can be narrower. So you basically get a higher storage density. And then you save on the rental cost. And with the Toast Person solution, you get even higher storage density. So even if further cuts down your spendings on the storage rentals for your products.
Okay, great. Interesting. So Mo, I think you've given us a good overview so far. Is there anything that we didn't cover that's important for people to understand here?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground. And I think thank you for inviting us to join this podcast. And that's an interesting experience for me. Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure. Just then last question, Mo. If folks who are listening want to learn more about Geek Plus, what's the best way for them to get in touch with the team?
I think they can go to our website, www.geekplus.com, GEKPLUS.com. There's a lot of information. They can also contact our sales teams through there.
Okay, great. We'll put it in the show notes. Thank you, Mo.
All right. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks for tuning into another edition of the IoT Spotlight podcast. If you find these conversations valuable, please leave us a comment and a 5-star review. And if you'd like to share your company's story or recommend a speaker, please email us at team@iot1.com. Finally, if you have an IoT research, strategy, or training initiative that you would like to discuss, you can email me directly at erik.walenza@iot1.com. Thank you.